The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show. Jordan Hamm and Haley Stasiak filling in for Brad Sesmat. We have a great show for you. Gerald Bourget, Hoops Habit editor-in-chief and lead Suns reporter, will be joining us, as well as Zach Clark from ESPN Tucson. The Roadrunners are in the playoffs, so we're going to be talking to him, as well as plenty of U of A news. But first things first, Haley, how are you doing?
Great. It's Tuesday, right? I kind of lose track of my days.
It is Tuesday, yes.
But they all just blend together eventually.
So big week, draft week, MLB season in full swing. There's some drama with the NFL. We'll get to that as well as the NBA playoffs. So a lot to cover, but we are going to start things off with the Sagicor Now rundown. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And in my mind, there's a very important story. It's not the NBA playoffs. Jenny Kavner. She is the field reporter, dugout reporter, also an in-studio host covering the Rockies. She did play-by-play for the Rockies last night. First time in 25 years a female had done play-by-play. Just first things first, Haley, what are your thoughts on this story and kind of Jenny's overall broadcast performance?
I thought she did really well. And, I mean, she's been around the Rockies fan base for years, so this is not a new voice for them. It's a new voice in that play-by-play role, but they've been seeing Jenny Kavner do her thing for years. So for the Rockies fan base to get this kind of monumental historic experience, it was really cool.
Yeah, and she is one, I think she's one of the best. I've followed her for a while on Twitter, and her work through the MLB package. It seems like I've watched a lot of Rockies over the past couple of years, and she does a great job. Sports are all about inclusion. You know, it's people from all walks of life can support the same team, no matter what their backgrounds are. And I think that's one of the great things about sports, and just continuing to see the representation from just really strong reporters like Jenny Kavner, like Jess Mendoza, who has been in an analyst role for Sunday Night Baseball, Kate Scott at the Pac-12, Beth Moens, Doris Burke doing the play-by-play thing in their respective sports. I just think that's so important, and it's a trend I really like to see and hope it continues.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, I mean, for the Rockies fan base to get to see this in a different role, I think that's what it boils down to. A lot of people will say, like, oh, this is weird. It's not something that I'm used to. But when you've heard a voice for as long as the Rockies fans have heard Jenny Kavner's voice, to hear her in that role, that's huge.
Mm-hmm. And she's also developing a catchphrase. Here is a home run from Nolan Arenado. Jenny Kavner on the call along with the rest of that Rockies crew.
One count. And that ball is shot into left field. Fire up the fountains. She's gone.
Okay.
But it works for the Rockies to get on the board.
That's what we wanted to hear, Billy, right? We wanted to hear Jenny's home run call.
Well, off the bat, you could tell by the sound, and I was really hoping she was going to get it right off the bat. She did it. Fire up the fountains, Nolan Arenado. This ball is gone. I love it.
Fire up the fountains.
I loved their reaction to it too. You could tell that they were anticipating that, waiting to see what she would do. And when she said that, they went crazy. That
yeah,
was awesome.
Yeah. And that's a great call on a tweener home run. That's tough to call those low line drives that just get over. But just great call. And again, just definitely want to see more of that. Maybe Jody Jackson.
She could.
She could call any of the Arizona sports and do a great job as well. Moving on, staying in the NL West. So Walker Buehler got the call for the Dodgers last night. He is the top pitching prospect for the Dodgers. In his debut, goes five innings pitched, three walks, four hits, zero earned runs, and five strikeouts. And I think this is significant for Diamondback fans, just to be aware of this guy. He had gotten the call up last year in a bullpen role, kind of struggled in that respect. But this guy pitched over at Vanderbilt, actually with Dansby Swanson, was on that national title team. A really good pitcher, and similarly to what we saw last year with Cody Bellinger and kind of the spark that he gave them. I don't know if it'll be the level that Cody did, but it's just interesting to see how many young, talented prospects this Dodgers team
has. Well,
and
you know, it seems like there's a lot of great pro players that come out of Vanderbilt. We've seen trends like that. I mean, the Diamondbacks have some prospects from Vanderbilt that have been doing well, been up in big league camp for the spring training and stuff. But I think the key thing here with the Dodgers, there's a lot of things that are still being pieced together this year. And having Buehler come up into this starting rotation and do well as he did, that's going to be huge for them. And we may see a spark now coming back for the Dodgers.
The Dodgers, I think, are one of the better franchises in the MLB in terms of being able to cultivate that young talent coming up. Because it seems like every single year they have a young prospect who's really good coming up, whether it's Corey Seager, Jacques Peterson a couple of years ago. We saw what they did with Bellinger. It seems like they have a good group that's able to get those guys ready to go in a big market right off the bat. So definitely going to be interesting to see how that fares. And very similarly to the Diamondbacks, I think the Diamondbacks, or Brad and I talked yesterday about how it's almost like they're going to have kind of midseason acquisitions when Jake Lamb comes back, when Steven Souza comes back from injury. The Dodgers can kind of get that jump start without having to make a transaction by having one of these top guys get called up. And we saw what Walker Buehler can do. So certainly something to keep an eye on in the NL West moving forward. I know you have some opinions on this story. One of the more interesting stories, and I don't think it's a story if this is going on 5 years ago, 3 years ago, who knows?
No, not even. I would definitely say the least amount, three.
Yeah, so
not even three.
Julio Jones, Atlanta Falcons wide receiver, went through Instagram and deleted all of his Falcons related photos. And some people are trying to read between the lines and see if there's some drama between him and Atlanta.
Well, I mean, the Falcons came out and said, no, he's just trying to clean up his social media. And I think what a lot of people that maybe don't realize is there's a feature on Instagram where you can archive these photos. So we may see them pop back up on his Instagram feed, and it's going to be like nothing was wrong. I read somewhere that he was speaking with Alabama football players and was trying to set an example for them. But I don't think this is, I just kind of am like, this is news.
Haley was fired up pre-show
of all the things
about this story. But it's just funny, like, as reporters, how much we utilize social media to kind of get some background on players, whether it's at the high school, college, or pro level, just kind of seeing what they're all about.
Well, and if you look at some Instagrams, there's an aesthetic. That's what they call it, an aesthetic, a color scheme. So maybe he's just trying to change his color scheme.
Maybe.
If we're going to look at every angle of this.
Maybe he's trying to do more lo-fi filters. Who knows? In other news, the Pelicans pick up the option on Alvin Gentry, the former Suns head coach. They just swept the Blazers. We're going to talk with Gerald Bourget more about that in the next segment. But good for Alvin Gentry. I think a lot of the issues that the Phoenix Suns had when he was there had nothing to do with him. He was pretty handcuffed by that roster. So he will be picked up for another year with Anthony Davis, with Drew Holiday, maybe more playoff Rajon Rondo. Who knows? But we're going to get into that with Gerald Bourget. And then just wrapping up this segment, Diamondbacks had the off day yesterday. Big road trip, Philadelphia and Washington. Just what are you looking for with this couple of series?
Honestly, just to keep it going. I think we obviously saw them bounce back after that game that they lost against the Giants last week, and then they got the series win. We saw them lose the first game in the series for the first time this season and still get the series win. So just seeing them keep it going and more, I mean, we're expecting some big players back here in the next month or so. So just to see what this team can do without those players, and then when they get back, what they can do with them.
I'm interested to see how Matt Cook does on the road. Had a great starting debut at Chase Field, but it's always a little bit different when it's not your home crowd. So we'll see that. And then game two of this series, that's tomorrow, you have Zach Greinke and you have Jake Arrieta going head-to-head.
So I
think that's going to be a great one. Jake Arrieta has hit the ground running since signing with the Phillies. So coming up next, we have Gerald Bourget, the Hoops Habit editor-in-chief and lead Suns reporter. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. Jordan Hamm and Haley Stasiak filling in for Brad today. And with so much swirling around the NBA playoffs, we have the upcoming NBA lottery a few weeks from now. I wanted to bring in my good buddy and Hoops Habit editor-in-chief and Suns lead reporter Gerald Bourguet. Gerald, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
So we have the Pelicans sweeping the Blazers, the 6-3 matchup. Other than that, we have a bunch of Game 5s going on. Just what's been the most compelling storyline to you so far through these playoffs?
I mean, for me, other than the Pelicans, it probably has to be that Pacers-Cavs series. It's not the prettiest of basketball right now, but, you know, we're really starting to see the holes kind of shine through for this Cavs team. Outside of LeBron, he's not getting a lot of help. Kevin Love isn't playing particularly well. The bench and that roster shakeup that they went through at the trade deadline aren't really paying off. And the Pacers were kind of an overlooked team heading into this. You know, we all know about LeBron's first-round greatness and how successful he is in the first round. But this was a very good team during the regular season, and they do provide some matchup problems for this Cavs team. So I think they dropped an opportunity in Game 4 to really have a chance to pull off this upset. But that series is a lot more competitive than a lot of people thought it'd be.
Is the Cavs-Pacers game your Game 5 to watch, or is there another matchup tonight that you have your eye on?
I mean, I think so. I also would just throw in the Sixers-Heat game just because watching the Sixers play is a joy right now. Yeah. They're just so much fun, and you know, that series has been entertaining from start to finish, even in the blowout. So it kind of a toss-up for me, but probably from a competitive standpoint, Pacers-Cavs.
On the west side of the bracket, it seems like all year it's been a collision course for the Warriors and the Rockets to meet up in the conference finals. Is there another team on that side of the bracket that you think could unseat one of those in the conference finals?
Yeah, you know, it's actually... it's kind of a toss-up between the other two that it looks like it's going to be. You know, right now the Pelicans have already advanced and the Jazz are one win away from doing the same. And both of those teams are playing really well right now. I'd probably give the edge to the Pelicans just because we don't know when Steph Curry will be back, what he'll look like when he's back. I think a fully healthy Warriors team doesn't have to worry, but with the way Drew Holiday played, I mean, he shut Damian Lillard down, and Damian Lillard had, like, an all-NBA caliber season this year. He outplayed him on both ends, and then Anthony Davis is just a nightmare as it is. The Pelicans are shooting the ball well. If the Warriors aren't fully healthy and fully clicking by that point, that could be a much more competitive series than people will expect.
Lots of discussion around the Suns' head coaching job in recent weeks. Who is your pick to help get this team back to where it once was?
Well, unfortunately, the guy that I would have picked is already out of the running. They had Mike Budenholzer here for 2 days, and apparently there was no traction on hiring him as the head coach. And I'm assuming that's either because he wanted more money than the Suns were willing to offer, or because he wanted... you know, to be a part of the front office, like a team president type role like he had with the Hawks, and the Suns weren't willing to give it to him. So now I would have to say my guy is probably David Fizdale, but I think he or Steve Clifford would both be good hires just for a rebuilding team as far as instituting a team defense, hopefully instituting a modernized NBA offense that emphasizes three-point shooting. I think either one of those guys would be good for that job.
The Sixers were in the gutter for quite a while, and almost the whole trust the process movement was sort of laughed at by the NBA community for a little bit before they really got some traction. And you even said yourself, they're a joy to watch. Can the Suns look at the Sixers model as a way to contend for the future with their own timeline?
I mean, you kind of have to hope so at this point. It's been 8 years since the last time they were in the playoffs. And to be fair, the rebuild didn't really start fully until, 2 years ago. They tried to rebuild. They tried to tank that 2013-14 season where they ended up winning 48 games and almost made the playoffs, and that kind of threw everything off. So if you really look at when they've started rebuilding, it started with you know, drafting Devin Booker and then obviously bottoming out the last two seasons with Josh Jackson and, you know, possibly the number one pick this summer. I'm not sure that Devin Booker or Josh Jackson are quite the same caliber of talent as Joel Embiid or Ben Simmons. The Sixers landed two unbelievable young players who, I mean, those are both franchise players, and they got two of them. Devin Booker is definitely a franchise player. Josh Jackson looks like a franchise pillar. Now in this draft, the Suns really need to nail whoever they select, whether it's DeAndre Ayton or Luka Doncic or whoever it might be. They need that same kind of immediate superstar who's going to take this team to the next level alongside those young players.
You mentioned that possible first pick. Hypothetical scenario here. Phoenix hasn't had a lot of luck in the lottery, but if the Suns were to get the first pick, who's your choice?
This is going to be an unpopular choice for any Wildcats listening out there, but I would go with Luka Doncic on this one. I know that there's some overlap. He's, you know, a 6'7", 6'8 wing, but, I mean, he's one of the youngest players in the draft. He's putting up numbers in the second-best league in the world that no overseas prospect has ever put up, especially at that young age. He's going to be phenomenal, even though people are going to point to his lack of athleticism. This kid can create for himself. He can create for others. And, you know, if you have a 6'7 guy who has that kind of ball handling and passing ability, putting him alongside Devin Booker would be a dream. I mean, that offense would be incredible to watch. Ayton has some defensive tendencies that I'm a little worried about. I think he's going to be great. I think if the Suns get either one, they'd be thrilled. But personally, I would go with the guy that's going to make life a little bit easier for Devin Booker.
Obviously, this is a very big offseason for the Suns and the timeline and really Ryan McDonough's future. But if you could have, you know, three objectives this offseason that the team should accomplish to call this a productive offseason, what would those three things be?
Well, let's see. I mean, for starters, got to nail the draft. Either Ayton or Doncic would be doing that. So obviously that comes down to a little bit of luck, but that's definitely goal number one. Is getting a top two pick to be able to get one of those two. Number two, especially if they wind up with a guard or a non-big in the draft, I would throw a ton of money in free agency at Clint Capella, especially if, you know, they catch wind that the Rockets are trying to land like LeBron James or Paul George or someone like that who's going to tie up their cap space. Clint Capella is a restricted free agent, so they could match any offer on him. But if the Rockets try to pursue someone else and they get their money tied up, the Suns could make life really hard on them by just throwing a max offer his way, which I think they should do if they don't draft a big in the draft. And other than that, they need to get some veterans who can not only, you know, they have Jared Dudley, they have Tyson Chandler. Those guys are great for the locker room, but you need actual players that can win you basketball games. You know, the best experience to pass on to these youngsters is by actually showing them on the court. And as good as Dudley and Chandler are as locker room mentors, they're not those guys that can help you win ball games anymore. So they need to get somebody, some veterans who can shoot, maybe some help for the front court, but just guys that are actually going to help this team win more ball games next year, because, you know, Devin Booker's patience is going to start to wear thin if they have another bad start next season.
Great stuff, as always, Jared. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That is Gerald Bourget, editor-in-chief of Hoops Habit, as well as the Suns' lead reporter. That's a fan-sided network site, and really tapped in on the Suns and the entire NBA. Just what's your biggest takeaway from what Gerald said?
In that last answer to your last question, the veteran leadership, I mean, any team needs that, and I think that's definitely what the Suns are lacking. They've got the youth. They've got the talent there. But you need someone to show the ropes. You need mentors and leaders that are going to take this team to the next level from with their talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think the Clint Capella as well, an interesting thought, just the progression of the thought that, if the Rockets want to go over the top and tie up some big money, the money has to come from somewhere. So maybe the Suns could help help the Rockets out if it's a sign and trade, or be a good suitor for a young player like him. So that was Gerald Bourguet. Coming up next, we have Zach Clark of ESPN Tucson. A lot happening in Tucson with the Roadrunners as well as U of A. That's coming up next here on the Brad Sessmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmat Show. Jordan Hammond, Haley Stasiak filling in for the big guy. And now we have Zach Clark from ESPN Tucson joining us. Zach, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, guys. Good morning.
So the Roadrunners won their first playoff game. They're getting ready. First playoff game. Just how big of a deal was this for the Tucson community, and just how have they really rallied around this team?
You know, it's interesting. This started on the day of their first playoff game last week was the two-year anniversary of this announcement that they were going to buy the team in Springfield and move into Tucson. It's interesting to watch this grow over the last couple of years. They had a great start last season, and there was a tragedy with Craig Cunningham, and that kind of derailed the rest of the season, at least on the ice. But this season, they've maintained dominance start to finish, and you've seen the Arizona Coyotes go out of their way to make sure that this team succeeds in trades made at the deadline, and certainly in guys they've sent down like Dylan Strome. So I think people are going to be out in force. Tomorrow is the first-ever Calder Cup playoff game in Tucson, down at the Tucson Arena. And I think people are excited. I know I'm excited. I think what's going to happen, I hope what happened, is that once you see it for the first time, once people experience it, that they'll come back and continue to enjoy it. Because, I mean, playoff hockey, for those that don't know, is a thing unlike any other. So, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. And I think the community at large is as well.
Clayton Keller is a finalist for the Calder Trophy, which is awarded to the NHL's most proficient rookie. We see players up and down between Tucson and Phoenix all the time for going down to get reps or going up because of injuries. You mentioned Dylan Strome. Is he your guy to watch in the future for the next big guy to make a difference for the Coyotes?
Oh yeah, I think there's no doubt. I mean, you watch him down here, and he spent some time up in Phoenix this year, but the time he's been in the AHL, it's like he's playing on a smaller rink. His numbers are ridiculous, over a point a game. He is so good, at least at this level. And I think the reason that Tucson kept him down here was to get some of that postseason experience. He certainly is NHL ready, but I think it's good for him, and I think it's good for the organization as a whole to experience that winning culture. I mean, it's not as if the Coyotes have never had success before, but it's been a while, and everybody in this system, I mean, Shane Doan was the last holdout, and he's gone. Needs to experience that. I think guys like Dylan Strome will benefit greatly from this, and I think you saw last year guys like Brendan Perini benefit, and you've seen him. He had a nice season up in Glendale this year.
It was, let's say, an eventful March for Arizona basketball. Now that the initial dust has settled, just what's the overall attitude around the program? I know that they didn't have a recruiting class up until a couple of weeks ago, and they're continuing to add guys. But just what's been the overall attitude towards that program over recent weeks?
Yeah, Jordan, the last couple of months really has been crazy. I mean, really, you can go back to September. But, yeah, I mean, there was no recruiting class with the departures of both Brandon Williams and Sharif O'Neal. And then, you're right, for a while there was no recruiting class. And you have this story swirling. You have this FBI investigation swirling. And no recruits. And you look around and you think to yourself, you know, we just got knocked out by Buffalo in the first round. What the hell are we going to do? But picking up a guy like Devin Aguirre did a couple of things. One, he is a good player. And two, I think it kind of I don't know if it's signaled to everybody else, but I think kids look at him and say, well, if he's willing to commit, why shouldn't I be willing to? Now, the other two guys they've picked up, the kid from Belgium, who was a complete mystery to almost everybody, and the transfer Ryan Luther from Pitt, not the biggest name guys, but again, you mentioned it, Jordan. Arizona had no recruits. Now they have three. And when it comes to Brandon Williams, he's still on the board. He still has Arizona in his top three. It feels like he's going to go to Oregon, but I'm your last guy to talk recruiting. You know that. So I think people feel better. I think the anticipation of another shoe dropping is there, but I don't think it's as sharp or people are as vigilant. I think there's a certain sense of calm, at least for the moment.
Shifting gears from the court to the diamond, Arizona baseball has had one of the most consistent pitching staffs this season, and that's kind of been the big story. They've got some young bats in that lineup. They were swept by number two Stanford last weekend. What's going to be the key for them coming into this last month and into the postseason?
Yeah, that Stanford sweep was tough. Arizona had a couple opportunities on both Friday and Saturday to win games, but Stanford is just so good from every angle, starting pitching, offense, defense, closer. But for Arizona, and Haley, you're right about the pitching. Guys like Cody Deason have done a really good job, and that really was the question going into the season. You know, it's funny, but the Diamondbacks do the same thing where the assumption was the offense would be great and the pitching would be questionable, or at least we have some questions about the pitching. And it's flipped, and you see that in Phoenix. You see it here in Tucson as well. And so I think what Arizona needs to do, I mean, you see guys like Jacob Quintana, Quintana has been so much better lately. Jacob Blass, you've seen some of these younger guys, these freshmen, these sophomores, really come into their own. And then you have guys like Alfonso Rivas, a preseason All-American, who's having a really good season. For Arizona, it's going to be about consistency. They're going to have to do better, especially on the road. You've seen them improve, but that's going to continue. They've got to go to Utah. But here's what the good thing is for Arizona right now. They've lost five times at home. Three of those were against Stanford, like you just mentioned. They get Arizona State at home. They get UCLA at home. They have to go to Oregon. There's still time. That becomes less true every time they play. But there is still time. I talked to Aaron Fitt yesterday, one of college baseball's foremost experts. He still has Arizona as a two or a three in the postseason. So they'll just have to maintain. And I think that's certainly doable for them. They'll have to get it done with the opportunities there in front of them.
Talking to Zach Clark, ESPN Tucson. Zach, Arizona football just wrapped up their first spring session under this new coaching staff. Just what are your first impressions of that new regime?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We met them. We met the staff one by one, practice after practice. It was one new time. And there just seems to be, and I don't think this will surprise anybody, a different air around the facility. And again, that doesn't mean that the previous one was problematic or an issue. I can't tell you that it was. The university made the decision and told you that it was. But there seems to be a certain level of calm that maybe you wouldn't have seen before. And I think you saw that easy breezy at the spring game. I mean, if you ever been to Rich Rodriguez on practice, it's not calm. And he's not calm, which, again, isn't necessarily a bad thing. But, I mean, red faces and four-letter words were commonplace. Kevin Sumlin is just kind of laid back and cool, calm, and collected. So there's definitely a different feel from that aspect of the program. And you know, I think with Arizona, you're going to see this, and you haven't seen it in a while, that Arizona's defense is not only getting better, but this time it should get better to the point where it should actually be good. And you saw the defense be able to control the offense for better portion of the spring. And that doesn't worry me. That doesn't worry about the offense. I mean, the defense keeps their coordinator in Marcel Yates, so the system changes very little. And it doesn't change a ton of assets, but still, you're not even learning new cadences or playbooks on the defensive side of things. And they've got so many kids that have played. And then, of course, you know, Khalil Tate is phenomenal. And the hope is that Arizona's offensive line can keep him healthy and he'll grow as a passer. And I think you'll see him use more that way. But, you know, I think all in all, it was a really good spring. You know, we don't know about Scotty Young Jr., the sub-defensive back. But overall, I think, again, a good spring.
Great stuff, as always, Zach. Thanks so much for joining us.
Y'all are heroes. Thank you.
All right, that was Zach Clark, ESPN Tucson.
Very plugged in Tucson scene.
Yeah, just no matter what it is, he is on it, whether it's U of A or the Roadrunners. Now, I know you've been following the Roadrunners closely. Just what do you make of this whole situation and just kind of echoing of what Zach had to say?
Well, I think we talk a little bit about just Talking Arizona and how it's not something that you would necessarily expect. On the Coyotes exit day, there were a few questions asked to some of the guys that were new to the scene about hockey in the desert, and it's growing. It is a big deal, and it's something people don't realize. And so I think for the success that the Roadrunners have had this year, and like Zach said, early in last year before Craig Cunningham went down with his scary injury, the progress that this organization is making with this talent at this level is huge.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about being statewide, you know, not just Phoenix. I think the Arizona Coyotes have certainly kind of adopted that as well.
Well, and it's a benefit to having their AHL team in Tucson, so it's a quick trip.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no real flaw in that. You know, you have them an hour and a half, 2 hours away. You're continuing to build that community and, you know, pair that with ASU's strong hockey program. You know, that it's definitely a good thing for the hockey scene here in Arizona. So that was Zach Clark. Again, just does a great job on ESPN Tucson. He also Facebook Lives all of his shows. So if you want to keep track that way, he has a great show each and every afternoon from 3 to 7 on ESPN Tucson. Coming up next, we're going to touch on the NFL draft, and an unlikely draft analyst shares his thoughts on the quarterbacks. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmatt Show. Jordan Hamm and Haley Stasiak filling in for Brad. Had some great guests today. Gerald Bourget, Hoops Habit editor-in-chief. He filled us in on all the happenings of the NBA playoffs, as well as had some good thoughts about the Suns moving forward. And Zach Clark of ESPN Tucson talking Tucson Roadrunners, as well as multiple University of Arizona programs. So if you miss those, this will be on demand after. Go ahead and check that out. It will also be in podcast form. So they shared some really good thoughts. So definitely check that out. We're now going to shift gears. It is NFL draft week. For me, this is like Christmas week. I love the NFL draft. Really, almost all of the pro drafts I enjoy, but the NFL draft, I am the guy. If it says mock draft, I'm going to click on it. I'm going to read through it. I'm going to critique it a lot. But if the next day the same person has another mock draft, I'm going to read it. So,
what makes the NFL draft different from other pro drafts then in that aspect for you?
I think it's just I follow college football probably closest of the three college.
That's
exciting.
Seeing these
three
guys
or four major college sports.
Do the
next big thing. Yeah. So, but yes, I am all about the draft. I know there are quite a few people on our staff and within
There's a different buzz about the office.
Totally,
sure.
Totally. But in terms of draft storylines, what are you looking at?
Honestly, I'm a Baker Mayfield fan. I think, yeah, he got into a little bit of trouble. I didn't agree with some of his on-field stuff last year, but I think he's a guy that can come into the NFL and kind of make it a little bit more relevant again. I mean, I'm not necessarily an NFL fan. I don't seek out NFL games. But to see a character like Baker Mayfield, that's intriguing to me and kind of makes me want to keep tabs more.
From his size, from his athletic ability, from his swagger, we'll call it, he kind of breaks the mold in terms of quarterbacks, at least from what we've seen recently, the combination of all three of those. You're a big Baker Mayfield fan. Also, Archie Bradley is, if you didn't know, he's a big Oklahoma fan. He doesn't really hide that. He's pretty diehard. I was able to catch up with him earlier this week talking about the draft and the various quarterbacks. And shocker, he really likes Baker, and he also gives some thoughts on a Arizona quarterback who has some Oklahoma ties as well. Check this out. Well, many know Archie Bradley as the Beard, one of the top relievers in all of Major League Baseball, but he was also a one-time Oklahoma Sooners quarterback commit and a participant in the Elite 11. So naturally, this year's NFL draft is particularly interesting to him because of that deep quarterback class that includes Baker Mayfield of his beloved Sooners.
Obviously, I'm sticking with my guy Baker from Oklahoma. I think he's the smartest guy in the draft, most athletic. Love Josh Allen, love Darnold, love Rosen. I still love Lamar Jackson. I love them all, man. I think there's some really good QBs in this class.
What do you think is it about Baker Mayfield that will make him be a good pro?
I said the IQ. You know, when you talk about guys making the jump from the college to NFL, and I'm not speaking from experience, just from the analyst I hear is the speed of the game and the plays and understanding defenses and how to work around that. And I feel like from everything I've heard and the system he ran at OU, that mentally he's prepared to make those adjustments.
Now, aside from Baker, who would you want, your hypothetical NFL team taking at quarterback?
I like Josh Allen. Guy's got a cannon, makes throws on the run. I think he's the big guy to look out for.
And while we're on the topic of quarterbacks and Oklahoma, Bradley's also a fan of pinnacle quarterback Spencer Rattler, who committed to the Sooners last summer and is one of the top quarterbacks in the nation.
I got to meet him a couple times. I think I met him at a Suns game, and kick and ball, man. I just watched him win a state championship in basketball, and I'm actually going to try to get out to a game this fall and see him play. But big-time commit. We had a few receivers commit last week. It's been a good week for us.
And he even had some time to evaluate his film.
I mean, back shoulder right there, quick off the line, third step, let the ball go, that's nice. The hitch, throwing it deep, and right in stride, man, it kind of looks like me. I think he's a little more athletic than I was. Rolling out, ooh, back across the body, and it's good. I mean, that's what I see the most is the athleticism in this guy. He's got the arm, makes the throws, and Lincoln and those boys will get him right. This is sick, though.
So, yeah, Archie Bradley, I mean, he's not just an Oklahoma fan, as I mentioned. He was in the Elite 11 as a high schooler. He was committed to Oklahoma before going seventh overall to the Diamondbacks. So either way, he was going to be throwing something hard in his professional career. He gives – and it's just really funny – when I gave him my phone and was like, do you want to evaluate some of Spencer's film?
He was all over it, I'm sure.
Oh my, he snatched that phone up as quickly as he could and was just...
He's not bad. Hey, end of his baseball career, he can step in that analysis.
You can tell he's a bit of a football nerd, and he really loves it. So that was
cool.
That was really cool to see, and shocker, he loves Baker. But Josh Allen, the other guy that really jumps out to him, in terms of the rest of the draft. You know, Brad kind of gave his thoughts on the Cardinals and what they should do, and he thinks they should move back.
There's been talk about them trying to trade up.
Yeah, and you know, Peter King had said that maybe Denver is the one that might be the one that they're able to jump up 10 spots. I think unless there is a guy at 15, there's more than you're not a young quarterback away. You know, if you're going to compete with the Rams for a long time, the Niners for a long time, you know, the Seahawks are kind of on the downward turn as well. They have their young quarterbacks already, and the Cardinals, you know, need some help on the offensive line. Larry Fitzgerald, we don't know how much longer he's going to play. If you can acquire more of those mid-round picks, I think that's the way to go. And I was actually reading Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback, and one thing that he mentioned was those day two picks have more value than ever because it is such a deep draft that the value charts that they kind of evaluate their trades on, it's skewed this year because there are so many guys in that second and third and fourth round. And if we've seen anything from Steve Keim, he knows how to draft third, fourth, fifth round as well.
Well, and I feel like, I mean, there's all this talk about all these quarterbacks going in the first round. I mean, we've got a lot of Arizona guys that are going in the draft this year. People forget that those later rounds, there's still value in those,
yeah,
like you just mentioned. And there's depth in this draft for sure. That stay tuned for day two, three, because there's going to be lots there.
Yeah, I mean, David Johnson was a third round pick. You know, John Brown, they were able to do a lot in those middle rounds. And it's usually going to be a small school guy that they see at the Senior Bowl. It seems like that was kind of the MO, at least with Arians and Keim. We'll see, you know, how Wilkes kind of change, if that changes the philosophy at all. But Steve Keim's done a really nice job. One other thing about the draft, I think this is going to further put Arizona High School on the map because we've seen the growth in terms of recruiting. The big programs are coming here more and more. But now the ceiling for these guys, you know, you'd have a couple guys make it to the NFL that were big time players. You know, you're looking at like a Taylor Luan type. In this draft, you have Christian Kirk, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Oliver. I think all three of those guys are going to go in the first two or three rounds. And then Levi Wallace, who last I saw, he was about a fourth round pick, but this guy was a Tucson football player, was a walk-on at Alabama, and then all of a sudden became a starter for the national champion Crimson Tide. So those are four guys I think can really impact football, and schools can point to them and say, you want to get to the next level. And then the next level, you know, the highest level you can get to, you know, go check out Arizona. And the way that the league is shifting, you need guys that can catch the ball, that are big bodied and fast. Mark Andrews and Christian Kirk fit those molds. And then you need guys that can stop the other team from doing
all
that.
About versatility.
And that's Isaiah Oliver and Levi Wallace. So I think this year could really help put Arizona even more on the map. So a lot of really cool storylines this year in terms of the NFL draft. And I know I'm very excited for it. We'll have coverage throughout the week, both at the, you know, from the Cardinals angle, from the local angle, as well as ASU and U of A. So that does it for our Brad Sesmat show. Thanks so much to Gerald Borgay and Zach Clark for filling in, or for joining us, and Jordan Hamm, Haley Stasiak filling in. Thanks so much to Jared Nielsen for keeping us afloat as always. This is the Brad Sesmat show on Sports 360 AZ.